This week on Making Contact.
We humans have achieved the means to assume collective responsibility for our future at the precise moment we have encountered the imperative to do so.
Global warming, reaching peak oil consumption, an increasing gap between rich and poor. It's not all bad news, at least not for author and economist David Corton. He says, we may be on the cusp of a great turning. On this edition, you'll hear why. I'm Tina Rubio, your host on Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. You wouldn't have expected David Corton to raise any doubts about the soundness of the global economy and its ability to solve poverty and environmental damage if you knew him in the 1980s. At that time, he was on the front lines of the global economy, working for the U.S. Agency for International Development, touting the benefits of international investment in Southeast Asia. He was a Stanford-trained businessman. He served as a captain in the Air Force during the Vietnam War. He was also a Harvard professor of business. The way of the global economy made sense. Then something changed. In 1992, he wrote, When Corporations Rule the World. His most recent book, The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community. In May 2006, Corton spoke to an audience at the First Congregational Church in Oakland, California, about why he thinks we're on the cusp of a major shift from a world dominated by economic values to one that embraces human values.
I find it useful to start my presentation by reviewing a bit of the personal story that informs the thoughts I'll be sharing with you. I grew up in Longview, a small conservative town in Washington State, where my family owned a music and appliance store. In that experience, I rarely saw a person of a different race. I never met a Muslim, Hindu, or Buddhist. And never in my wildest imagination did it occur to me that as an adult I would reside for 21 years outside the United States in East Africa, Central America, and Southeast Asia on a mission to end global poverty by sharing the secrets of U.S. business success. And certainly I had no idea that I would be personally encountering humanity's wondrous diversity. During the course of my experience abroad, I came to realize that far from creating universal prosperity, the economic models that drove the organizations for which I worked were producing devastating consequences for people and planet. And the reason in hindsight is quite clear. And the implications apply to us as much as they apply to the people abroad that I went out to serve. These models call for decision-making based on maximizing returns to money rather than on maximizing the well-being of people and planet. And the more deeply I examined the issues, the clearer it became that these models primarily serve the interests of global corporations and financial markets. Everything else is pretty much incidental. In 1992, my wife and I moved from the Philippines to New York City to focus our attention on the deeper roots of the problems we'd gone abroad to resolve. And I set about to write When Corporations Rule the World. My search for a deeper understanding of the issues and their implications led to writing The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community. Writing this book drew me into ever deeper examination of the sweep of the human experience and of our unfolding awareness of our nature and our place in creation. And I want to share with you tonight some of the conclusions of the book, which begins with these prophetic words from the preamble to the Earth Charter. We stand at a critical moment in Earth's history, a time when humanity must choose its future. That is the defining charge of our time. For 5,000 years, the dominant human societies have organized relationships at all levels, from those among states to those among family members, by dominator hierarchy. Call it the era of empire. As I did my research for The Great Turning, I was stunned to realize that every empire in human history has been built on a foundation of slavery and bonded labor. You think about it, it is axiomatic. For a few to be on the top, the many must be on the bottom. And it remains so in our own time, with sweatshop and migrant agricultural workers being our modern equivalents. Now, since that fateful turn away from Earth community, imperial institutions have systematically reduced the vast majority of humans to conditions of servitude that suppress their creative potential, while elevating to the highest positions of power the most power-driven and ethically challenged among us. You may recognize this in our time. Throughout history, ruling elites have limited the competition for the positions at the top by denying the very humanity of whole groups of persons based on race and gender, arbitrarily consigning them permanently to the bottom and therefore outside the realm of competition. Racism, sexism, classism, and environmental devastation are all manifestations of these dynamics of the play-or-die competition for imperial power. Now, over 5,000 years, the primary institutional forms of empire have morphed from the imperial city-states of ancient time to the imperial nation-states of the modern era, and more recently to the imperial global corporations of our time. The pattern of domination and exclusion, however, remains largely unchanged. Many people ask me, why are you so obsessed about corporations? They're just communities of people. This argument, however, misses a critical point. In a publicly traded corporation, the people, including the CEO, are all employees of the institution, with few, if any, individual rights. They're paid to serve the institution at its pleasure, required by law to leave their personal values at the door, and subject to dismissal without recourse at a moment's notice. It is the institution, not the individuals, who count. In short, this is an institution of enormous power governed by absentee owners and unaccountable managers in the business of converting the life energy of people and nature into money for the short-term financial gain of already wealthy shareholders and managers without regard to human or natural consequences. In other words, the publicly traded limited liability corporation is a gigantic pool of money with an artificial legal personality required by law to behave like a sociopath. It is our modern equivalent of unaccountable and often sociopathic kings of the past. Exclusion, deprivation, and environmental devastation are inevitable consequences of the cultures and institutions of empire, and they will remain with us so long as we allow these cultures and institutions to define our values and relationships. Environmental devastation and the gap between rich and poor are growing at an accelerating rate as owners of capital monopolize ever more of the productive capacity of the planet and workers are squeezed to provide their labor at an ever lower price. On a finite planet, sustainability and equity are inseparably interlinked. Radical and potentially devastating change is now guaranteed by the mounting forces of a perfect economic storm, born of a convergence of peak oil, climate change, and US dollar meltdown. It becomes more certain by the day that this convergence is poised to bring a rapid and potentially devastating unraveling of the corporate global economy. Peak oil, of course, occurs when global oil production peaks and begins its inexorable decline as continued rising demand sends prices soaring. Oil output may have peaked last year in 2005. It may not peak until 10 years hence. The difference, however, is irrelevant. We must act immediately to eliminate our dependence on oil because the era of cheap oil is over. Now, the consequences of peak oil will be exacerbated by climate change. During the 20th century, the average surface temperature of the planet increased by 0.6 degrees Celsius. Projections of the increase anticipated by the end of the current century range from 2 degrees to 4.5 degrees Celsius. And we are already experiencing an ominous trend in weather-related natural disasters. From the decade of the 1950s to the first 5 years of the 21st century, and that is within the lifetimes of most of us in this room, the annual average of severe weather events increased from 24 per year to 350 per year. So hurricanes Rita and Katrina are but a foretaste of what lies ahead. According to a study commissioned by the U.S. Department of Defense, we can expect shorter growing seasons and a 10 to 25% global loss of crop yield. Water shortages, increase in forest fires, famine, disease, and severe weather events, and endemic resource wars and uncontrolled migration. So this is a serious business. The third element of the perfect economic storm, a meltdown of the U.S. dollar, is the consequence of a growing U.S. trade deficit that hit $750 billion in 2005 and continues growing. Growth in the trade gap is a measure of the extent to which we in the United States are living ever further beyond our own means, running up a credit card debt to the rest of the world, and leaving the bill to our children. It, of course, is also a measure of the rate at which we are hemorrhaging both the family wage jobs that created the U.S. middle class and the manufacturing technology and research capabilities that go with those jobs. Now, on the day the rest of the world tires of selling on credit to an economic deadbeat, the financial house of cards that supports our profligate ways will collapse. There are three potential scenarios for our future if we choose to play out a last man standing competition for the remaining resources of the planet. We can anticipate some combination of escalating military conflict and possible nuclear Armageddon, and or feudal fragmentation as after the fall of the Roman Empire. There is, of course, an alternative, which is to join in common cause in a cooperative effort to bring forth a living partnership of Earth community. Now, the combination of peak oil, severe weather events, and a U.S. dollar meltdown will force a dramatic restructuring of the way we live as the economic incentives shift from global to local supply chains and from suburban sprawl to compact communities. The communities that will fare the best will be those that act now to rebuild local supply chains with particular attention to becoming substantially self-reliant in energy and food. That imperative, thus, becomes an opportunity to build functioning communities, restore a sense of place, democratize economic power, and radically revise our priorities for the use of labor, land, and other natural resources, giving priority to life values over financial values.
When we come back, David Corton will talk about how this shift might take place. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also download programs or get our podcast at radioproject.org. We return to David Corton's talk about his new book, The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community. He spoke at the First Congregational Church in Oakland, California in May 2006.
Now, fortunately, we humans have achieved the means to assume collective responsibility for our future at the precise moment we have encountered the imperative to do so. And in my deeper spiritual exploration, I take this as evidence that creation is intelligent, compassionate, and wants us to survive as a species, survive and succeed. Consider, It was only a little more than 60 years ago that we created the United Nations, which for all its imperfections made it possible for the first time in the human experience for people of all, the representatives of people of all nations to come together to resolve their disputes through dialogue rather than force of arms. It was less than 50 years ago that we ventured into space to look back and see ourselves as one people sharing a common destiny on a living spaceship. That, of course, fundamentally changed our perception of ourselves and our relationship to the planet. Even more recently, only within the last 10 to 15 years, have our communications technologies given us for the first time the ability, should we choose to use it, to link every human on the planet into a seamless web of nearly costless communication and cooperation. So 4 million years passed from the time the first human-like species inhabited the Earth to the first use of the atomic bomb. We acquired the organizational and technological capabilities to choose the human future with conscious intent, only within the lifetimes of most of us in this room. And our future will be determined by how we now choose to use these capabilities. Unfortunately, our ability to make the obvious choice for life is seriously hampered by ill-advised economic policies crafted by corporate lobbyists who give priority to corporate profits at the expense of the well-being of our children, our families, communities, democracy, and nature. Their favored policies drive down wages and benefits for working people, thus forcing parents to take on multiple jobs paying less than a family wage that leave no time for childcare or community participation. They roll back regulations that protect the health and safety of children, families, communities, and the environment so that corporations can discharge tons of toxins into our air and water. They place quality education and health care and housing and retirement beyond the reach of most Americans. They give free rein to corporate lobbyists to buy political favors in defiance of the values and well-being of the average Americans. This would seem to create something of a political opportunity if we had a political party that was smart enough to embrace this. So how do the self-serving champions of corporate greed achieve our willing participation in destroying so many of the things we most value? The answer lies in the power of the stories by which we humans share our understanding of ourselves and our world. Through control of media and education, the institutions of empire drown out the voices of the authentic storytellers to create a kind of cultural trance that blinds us to our higher possibilities. Our national disability is compounded by our cultural conditioning to believe that it is our human nature to be individualistic and often violent competitors for power, money, and material possessions. By this reckoning, the very idea of living by the principles of Earth community would be contrary to our nature, and thus is a hopelessly naive idea. The truth is that psychologists who study the developmental pathway of the human consciousness report that those of us who enjoy the requisite emotional support, the support of strong families and strong communities, traverse throughout our lifetimes a pathway from the undifferentiated and self-referential consciousness of the newborn to the highly differentiated and inclusive spiritual consciousness of the wise elder. In short, we are a species of many potential natures. The misdirection plays out as well in the cultural stories by which we define the pathways to prosperity, security, and meaning. Consider how each of the following familiar stories reaffirm empires' relationships of domination. Start with the imperial prosperity story. It tells us an eternally growing economy brings prosperity for all. Economic growth requires wealthy investors who create jobs. Thus, for the good of society, we must free wealthy people from the taxes and regulations that limit their ability to accumulate the fortunes that allow them to invest. We, of course, must also eliminate welfare programs that strip away the incentive for poor people to be productive members of society by accepting those jobs at whatever wages the market offers. Ever hear any of those stories? Then there's the imperial security story that tells of a dangerous world filled with criminals, terrorists, and foreign enemies who must be controlled or removed by strong police and military forces. Then there's the imperial meaning story. It tells of a God who commands us to go forth to establish dominion over the earth, rewards the righteous with wealth and power, and mandates that they rule over the poor who justly suffer divine punishment for their sins. And they tell us that meaning is found in obedience to God and his appointed representatives. Now, we hear these stories so often that we tend to take them for granted. And we need to come to recognize them for what they are. They are part of the propaganda machine of empire. And they systematically affirm the legitimacy of economic inequality, the use of physical force to impose the will of rulers, and the special righteousness of the rich and powerful. So first we need to learn to recognize these stories, and then we need to come together to change them. Although it may seem absurdly simple, the key to changing the course of the human future is to change the stories by which we live. And it begins with finding the courage to break the silence and speak openly the truth in our hearts. Speaking the truth, we can then find one another and end our isolation by forming communities of congruence that link and grow. And working together, we can change the prevailing cultural stories, honor the needs of our children, facilitate the liberation of the higher orders of human consciousness, and change the course of the human future. So what's the unifying narrative of the new stories? Well, it's not really all that complicated. First of all, is our human nature, the idea that our human nature is defined by our capacity and indeed our responsibility to choose our nature. Second, democracy is a work in progress. Third, true prosperity, security, and meaning are found only in vibrant, caring, interlinked communities that support every person in realizing the fullness of their humanity. And consider this extraordinarily radical idea. Forget about growing the economy. Concentrate on growing strong and healthy children, families, communities, and natural systems, and prosperity, security, and meaning will surely follow. This awakening brings a turning from financial values to life values, from spiritual division to spiritual unity, from fearing our differences to rejoicing in our diversity, and from the scarcity of competition for dominator power to the abundance of cooperation for partnership power. Now, the transformation of cultural values establishes the foundation for an economic turning from evaluating progress by financial indicators to evaluating progress by the health of all our children, families, and communities, from hoarding to sharing, from absentee ownership by the few to local stakeholder ownership by the many, from land use policies that favor suburban sprawl to land use policies that favor compact communities that bring home, work, and recreation in easy reach by foot, bicycle, and public transit. From the conversion of forest and farmland to the restoration of forest and farmland, and from energy-intensive corporate factory farms to local low-input family farms producing fresh, flavorful, toxin-free foods. And the transformation of economic relationships creates the necessary conditions for a political turning from a $1, one vote democracy to a one person, one vote democracy. From passive citizenship to active citizenship. From competition for individual advantage to cooperation for mutual advantage. And from retributive justice to restorative justice. And from social order by physical coercion to social order by mutual responsibility and accountability. The most visible manifestation of the great turning to earth community is a newly emergent social organism that transcends the barriers of race, class, religion, and nationality to act as a social consciousness of the species. This is a social organism without precedent in the human experience, and we come to know it by the name Global Civil Society. The world's social forum is its annual meeting place. And as you will all recall, on February 15, 2003, it mobilized more than 10 million people around the globe on the same day to oppose the planned U.S. military invasion of Iraq. This extraordinary expression of a shared vision of a world of peace and justice for all was self-organized with no central organization, no central operating budget, no charismatic leader. Rather, it was organized by millions of ordinary people, millions of leaders using the internet as their connecting web. At Yes Magazine, we call it a conspiracy of hope. It's important to recognize just how radical this shift is. This is an expression of this new human capacity. All that in one single day. Never in any previous decade was that even conceivable. Okay, so here we are in America, in our politically divided nation. Where is the foundation for consensus on Earth community? Indeed, I think there is a far greater readiness in these United States to join in a great turning from empire and Earth community than we might at first imagine. For all the talk of red states and blue states, U.S. polling data reveal a startling degree of consensus on some very key issues. We are, in fact, mostly purple. Supermajorities of more than 80% want to give higher priority to children, family, community, and a healthy environment. Americans want a world that puts people ahead of profits, spiritual values ahead of financial values, and international cooperation ahead of international domination. Our distinctive human capacity for reflection and intentional choice carries a corresponding moral responsibility to care for one another and the planet. We must now test the limits of the individual and collective creative power of our species as we strive to become the change we seek. In these turbulent and frightening times, it is important to remind ourselves that we are privileged to live in the most exciting moment of creative opportunity in the whole of the human experience. The future is in our hands. Now is the hour. We have the power. We are the ones we've been waiting for. Thank you.
That was author David Corton speaking about his new book, The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community. That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to Dan Turner, Ronald Rucker, and Alexis McCrimmon. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. For a CD copy of program number 4206, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. Or go to radioproject.org. Lisa Redman is our executive director, Dorian Taylor communications manager, and I'm your host and senior producer, Tina Rubio. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.